Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Thank you for this opportunity to argue here today. On behalf of plaintiffs' appellants Mr. Thomas Betcher and his wife, Ms. Vennerberg, my name is Michael Frandino of the Aspen Law Firm. With me today is Jason Amott on your far left and Matthew Allison of the Indian and Environmental Law Group. Your Honors, this appeal concerns application of the discovery rule to statute of limitations and whether the district court erred in dismissing the Betcher's claims under Rule 12b-6. I would like to talk with the court about two issues today. First, while the parties agree that the Doherty case from the Oklahoma Supreme Court provides the applicable discovery rule, the parties diverge on what constitutes sufficient information to begin accrual of a claim that requires an expert to establish causation like the claim here.
Did you argue in district court that there has to be that the cause of action doesn't accrue until there is an expert that is obtained?
Your Honor, I believe that we did. First of all, the discovery rule was raised in the pleadings, including the complaint at appendix page 10, the amended complaint at appendix page 64, and the response to the first motion to dismiss at pages 31 to 32, and in the second, or response to the second motion to dismiss at appendix 69 to 70. Moreover,
in those pages, there was reference that the plaintiff had made about the necessity of an expert.
Well, Your Honor, the issue of an expert source is just part of the facts and circumstances that need to be considered when applying the reasonableness prong of the discovery rule in a case that requires expert causation and analysis. For example, in the Schrock case, which is cited at page 21 of the appendix, that was a products liability claim stemming from the plaintiff's use of a prescription drug called metoclopramine. Applying Oklahoma law, the Tenth Circuit held that the claims accrued when her doctor diagnosed her with a neurological disorder related to metoclopramine. And that site is 727 Federal 3rd at 1277.
What we're talking about here is preservation. And so the district court can't really give you the benefit of an argument that the discovery rule didn't start until you had an expert that told you what caused the leukemia, unless you make that argument specifically to the district court. And I've looked pretty carefully, and I can't see anywhere where you made that argument to the district court. And what I think I hear you saying is that you never made that argument to the district court.
Well, Your Honor, I would also cite the Doherty I would also cite the district court's opinion at page 76, which goes on to cite the Doherty and Williams v. Borden cases, both Oklahoma cases involving claims that require expert causation analysis, and both mention expert sources as part of the discovery rule analysis. Doherty concerned a toxic tort case stemming
from
a pesticide.
What about answering the question that was asked? But did you make the argument regarding the timing of the expert in the
Your Honor,
court?
We made the argument that the discovery rule applied, and I'm just saying that whether or not an expert opines on causation or there's an expert source in there is part of the factual circumstances that needs to be considered in assessing that.
But
and
the
I'm
answer
saying,
is you did not argue that in the district court.
Well, I'm arguing that by raising the discovery rule, we did make that argument. And not only that, but the district court addressed it, and the cases that they cite addresses it so that it's in the record. For example, Williams v. Borden is another case that is relied on by the district court, and that involves, or I'm sorry, in that case, the expert source was the article read by the plaintiff linking the plaintiff's disease with the defendant. And so, again, in that case, that's an expert source. That's a case that's cited.
You never made the argument to the district court that we filed our complaint within the statute of limitations if the statute began on the date we found an expert. Yes or no? That's a yes or no question.
Your Honor, the word expert
yes.
was not used.
Okay, thank you.
What were the words used?
Well, the discovery rule evolves, and as part of the overall facts and circumstances that are going to be considered.
Then you say boldly but inherently only in the discovery rule is the rule that the time starts running after an expert has opined to the client.
Well, we're not arguing here that an expert has to opine. We're saying that there has to be an expert source within the facts. And here, there was an allegation that our clients did not know of a potential or actual causal relationship until August 2015, and that they were diagnosed in 2011. So the absence of, you know, or the fact that they were diagnosed and then didn't learn until later, there's a reasonable inference that can be made under that circumstance that they're not causation experts themselves, and, you know, in that intervening time, they never spoke to anybody who would be considered somebody who'd be an expert or an expert read in an expert source.
The point was that not just there has to be this hypothetical expert out there in the world, but that this plaintiff had to have specifically known about that expert, regardless of any investigation.
Your Honor, I wouldn't say that it has to be a specific expert. What I would say is that, and then I would cite to the Mon case for this, that cancer is different. And there's a very long block quote that we include in the briefs about the many reasons why cancer is different. And there are some things, like there are non-liable causes of cancer. You're exposed to thousands of cancerous, potential cancer-causing agents every day. You know, when you're cured, you don't have the incentive to go out and investigate. And then I think that that's one fact that should be considered here is Mr. Boettcher achieved remission. And so, or sorry, mixed up my two cases. There are very few facts in the complaint. There's no doubt about that.
But what were you just saying there? In other words, you're saying that if somebody has cancer, they have an obligation under the discovery rule to figure out why they do. But once they go into remission, they no longer have an obligation.
I'm not saying they have no obligation. I am saying that under Mon, the considerations are different. The cases cited here include, give me one moment here. The cases cited here that talk about the pleading rules for the discovery rule are far different from a toxic tort case where cancer is at issue.
Do you, in the amended complaint, did you state that it wasn't discernible until 2015, but did you ever allege, even broadly, that Mr. Boettcher did not or could know about the correlation between his leukemia and benzene until he consulted with an expert, or any reference to an expert having attributed the leukemia to benzene admissions?
The use of the word expert is not in there, but I'm saying that that's a reasonable inference that can be made by the fact that we alleged that he was diagnosed in 2011 and did not know of a potential or actual causal relationship until 2015. And so within there, we don't say in the pleadings, Your Honor, and if this makes a difference, I think we should be given an opportunity to amend, because if it makes a difference that they're not experts in causation, then that is not something that we would have anticipated when writing the complaint, because it seems obvious from the pleadings to us that they're not experts on causation. And then that second factual allegation that they didn't know of an actual or potential causal relationship until 2015 does include the inference that they didn't speak to an expert in the intervening time. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to make that second allegation.
Or to talk to somebody, another one of the plaintiffs that may have.
Right. How they got that information in 2015 is not in the record, and that's why we're not arguing about it.
Well,
but whatever happened during that time, they didn't speak to anybody before that.
Yeah.
It's not in the complaint that they would have gotten sufficient information between those two time periods. And if they had spoke to an expert who told them of an actual or potential causal relationship, they couldn't have made that.
What about talking to Plaintiff Hall or Plaintiff Breyer or any of the other plaintiffs that have sued ConocoPhillips for similar claims?
I'm not sure that that would make the connection, Your Honor, but I see I have very little time if I could reserve what little I have remaining.
Okay. You bet. You've only reserved 11 seconds, but I'll be generous and give you a minute. We'll hear from the appellee.
May it please the Court, Joy Soloway for the appellees. I'm here with Brett Young, my partner, and Catherine McKellip, who's sitting in the back of the courtroom. I don't want to pile on. We do have a huge preservation argument here, which the Court has already identified through its questionings to appellant's counsel.
Can you pull the microphone a little closer? Thank you.
Do I need to repeat what I just said?
No.
Are you able to hear me? Okay. I think as we also heard the appellant's counsel just say, there are very few facts in the complaint on the discovery rule. It actually is one sentence in one paragraph, paragraph 9. Plaintiff also made the point that if they had known this was going to be the case, then they would have pleaded it differently and asked for an opportunity to replead. I would remind the Court that this was our second motion to dismiss. In our original motion to dismiss, we gave the plaintiff a blueprint. We cited to Twombly. We cited to the standards, to the Daugherty case. This is how you need to replead. They did take that opportunity to replead, and without explanation that we've ever gotten from the plaintiff, their amended pleading says even less about the discovery rule facts than their original pleading. Their original pleading at least had a correct statement of law, and that is, did you know or should you have known through reasonable diligence? The amended pleading says nothing about reasonable diligence. There's been questions about, we're not experts, we didn't know, and there's an inference that the Court should draw from the fact that we didn't know, that we couldn't have known. Well, we don't get to draw inferences until we have facts. And what we have in this complaint is a conclusory statement. And Twombly and Iqbal, which the Court discussed this morning in connection with the first argument, require that we disregard conclusory factual statements or conclusions of law that are dressed up as factual statements. And if we, once we disregard them, we see what's left in the complaint. And from what's left in the complaint, can we make a reasonable inference? Well, after you disregard the one-sentence conclusory statement, I didn't know, then there's nothing left. There is a statement also, well, we didn't find out until August of 2015. As the district court judge noted in its opinion in granting our motion to dismiss, left unanswered is, how did you find out in 2015 that there was this connection? Why didn't you find it out earlier? Today we're told, well, you should make the inference that we couldn't have found it out earlier. We can't make that inference because, again, there's no facts alleged. There's been some questions about, well, other people knew. This is not an isolated, random type of cancer that people don't know about. In a lot of the cases that are in the plaintiff's briefs, there were plaintiffs who were very diligent about trying to learn what was the cause of their diseases. The Bayless case is an excellent example of a plaintiff who was dogged in her determination to find out what is wrong with me. And as this court noted, that in a 10-year span of time, she saw more doctors than most people see in their entire lifetime. Now, that case was a summary judgment. In fact, all the cases that plaintiff cites were summary judgments, with the exception of one, which was a case that went to trial. As Judge Murphy pointed out earlier in connection with the 12B6 argument that was heard first this morning, that's putting it in a summary judgment context is a different posture. There are no cases that the plaintiff has cited to this court that say that his minimal pleading, which he has said today, where there are very few facts, should have survived a motion to dismiss. And again, I don't want to pile on to the preservation issue, but it is, it's the kind of the elephant in the room here. We don't get to these issues that he wants to talk about from the Daugherty case and sufficient information because none of that is in the pleading. And he referenced also that, well, the district judge wrote about that in its order, so it's in the record. The district judge did cite those cases for the standard of the discovery rule. That was the extent to which the district court discussed those opinions. So unless there's any questions by the court, I'm happy to give some of my time back, and we ask that the dismissal order be affirmed. There is no occasion to give the plaintiff another chance to replead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Brandina, I think you only have 11 seconds left. We'll give you a total of a minute.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just want to make the quick point that the Rule 12b-6 discovery rules that the District Court and Conoco defendants rely on are an ERISA case and a securities fraud case where expert causation analysis is not required. I think that the quote from Mon about cancer is pertinent to why those cases can't apply, and that is because there are many suspected causes of cancer, many of which are natural or non-negligent and would not give rise to a legal cause of action. Thus, a potential plaintiff, on learning that he has cancer, lacks the usual incentive to investigate the possibility that the known injury may give rise to a legal claim. In addition, even if he attempts to determine the cause of the disease, he is confronted with a mass of complex, controversial, and rapidly changing scientific data and opinions. Lacking the resources and knowledge necessary to carry out their own research into causation, potential plaintiffs must rely on potential defendants to carry out the necessary studies. When a person suffers from cancer, he may not understand, without expert assistance, that the disease may have been caused by unnatural elements in the environment. In addition, because of the often delayed development of the disease, the plaintiff may face enormous difficulties in determining when and where he was exposed to potential carcinogens, if at all. That's Mon 758, Federal 2nd at 1385-86. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. This matter will be submitted. Thank you, both sides, for your excellent advocacy today.